Decades ago, syphilis was thought to be close to being eliminated in the United States, but in recent years, cases of syphilis and congenital syphilis have surged. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Anne Zink, a lecturer and senior fellow at the Yale School of Public Health. Dr. Zink has co-authored a perspective article about the drivers of increases in congenital syphilis and strategies for reversing this trend. Dr. Zink, how does congenital syphilis affect development? What are the common complications in infants with the condition?
I'm a practicing emergency medicine physician and never really saw syphilis, as far as I know, when I was in my training, but something I now see regularly. And unfortunately, congenital syphilis can have really detrimental impacts on the unborn, including stillbirth and then hepatosplenomegaly, skeletal deformities, hearing loss, blindness, etc. And it is this perfect tip of the iceberg of where public health and healthcare either do or don't come together, and where our unborn are really taking on the burden of the challenges within our systems.
So after a peak in the early 1940s, you say in your article that cases of syphilis dropped rapidly. What accounted for that decline?
There was really tremendous work happening within the public health sector in the early 1930s and 40s to address syphilis and congenital syphilis. So everything from premarital laws to get tested for syphilis prior to getting married, as well as prenatal testing. As probably most of your listeners know, syphilis is treated with the oldest antibiotic, with penicillin, and we've had testing for it for a long time. And so once we had good antibiotics and good testing, there was a real concerted effort across the country to address syphilis and to start to test people early and to treat. And we saw a tremendous decline. It was a huge success within public health. Unfortunately, as you mentioned earlier, we're starting to see that hard-won effort reverse, and we're starting to see both an increase in syphilis as well as congenital syphilis cases.
So what factors have contributed to that reversal?
That's interesting. I was having a conversation actually with Dr. Rochelle Walensky, and we don't have a good sense of what it takes to keep diseases at bay. We have a lot of structures and setups to address new diseases. But cases like syphilis are things that we've kind of put in our past. And while we had it in our past, it has become somewhat forgotten. So there's, I think, a bunch of different things that have led to this rise in increased syphilis cases. First is just awareness, and that's why I appreciate the publication of this and this podcast, to help clinicians understand how syphilis is really on the rise. Not included in this paper, but a recent publication from Alaska's Department of Health and their Epi bulletins, they had run an opt-in testing in the Department of Corrections for those who are incarcerated for 14 days or longer. Granted, that's a subset of a population. And what they saw was that 4.6% of the population was RPR tested positive, and about half of those were new diagnoses. And when you break that down, you saw that there was a disproportionate burden of women, where 9.3% tested positive. And that resulted in 3.6% of all women who are entering incarceration had a new diagnosis of syphilis. And when you stop and think about that, that's pretty remarkable to think that 3% of the population entering into a prison system are testing positive with a new diagnosis of syphilis. And so you can understand why congenital syphilis cases are on the rise. This is complicated by the turnaround time for testing, the lack of facilities using point of care testing for syphilis testing, the very limited treatment supply opportunities that are available. We have one manufacturer of the penicillin in the country, which has been an incredibly short supply. And there's been some efforts to address this, but this continues to be a problem, as well as the lack of public health funding, as well as insurance funding for disease investigation to understand who else might be at risk and treating people early.
You've mentioned point of care testing. Moving forward, what kinds of policies or programs could help advance testing across the board?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, and it's hard to treat something you don't know exists. So first of all, I think we have a low threshold for suspicion, and then just increasing testing. So there's a lot that we can do as clinicians. I, as a practicing emergency medicine doc, now really test syphilis when I'm testing for other STIs in the emergency department. I'm also testing other higher risk individuals and anyone with a rash that I'm unsure about to be able to test early. But one of the real challenges is that testing is oftentimes a 3-day turnaround. And the majority of testing that comes about, it's hard to tell if it is a latent infection, if an active infection, or they've been previously infected. So there's been some development, and there's more development on the horizon to be able to have point of care or more rapid testing available. So we need hospitals and clinics, those in the community to be able to have access to that rapid testing. We also need manufacturers to help us to deliver on rapid testing that can allow us to determine the difference between active infection versus past infection, so that us in the front line can make these rapid decisions on treatment versus no treatment.
And then, speaking of treatment, How could gaps in access to treatment and in treatment completion be addressed?
It's surprising to me that our oldest antibiotic, which should probably be cheaper than the vial that it comes in, is still so hard to come by in this country. Currently, the federal government is allowing importation of two other penicillins that are not currently FDA approved to try to meet the gap between the need and demand for the penicillin, long-acting penicillin, versus what we have available within the state and in the country. So we really need to be able to address this upstream. We need additional manufacturing in this country to be able to produce penicillin. We need additional FDA-approved treatment options. But another huge challenge is we need more transparency within the actual structure of delivery of where those doses are at. So regularly, we see that an urban or suburban clinic may have plenty of access, and they're using it to treat strep throat versus the local FQHC has no access to it and is unable to address or to treat a really high-risk patient. Public health teams across the country have been trying to stand in and help in that space. But given the structure of our distribution in this country between a manufacturer, the suppliers, the purchasers, and those who are actually delivering medications like penicillin, there's really a black box. It's hard for us to see into that to have any sense of where the supply is. So we need to increase the supply. We need to increase the types of medications that can be out there. We need transparency on where doses are at. And we need to better align where the doses are at with the people who need it.
Finally, what types of interventions could be implemented to prevent and to identify and treat congenital syphilis specifically?
Congenital syphilis specifically very much needs to have this whole person and whole mother approach. So we've talked about just general syphilis cases. And if we decrease the total number of syphilis cases, there's less chance that a pregnant mom is going to have syphilis. So the burden lies both on men and women, as well as those who are treating people across the board. So if people are starting a new family or in a new relationship, getting tested early will help to reduce the risk that that mother may be exposed to syphilis during their pregnancy. But then also during pregnancy to be able to test for syphilis. So currently, the ACOG recommendations are not aligning with the USTP recommendations. So we need to make sure that we are testing regularly for syphilis during pregnancy, particularly high-risk individuals, a third trimester testing as well. And this can be a real challenge when patients are having a harder time accessing prenatal care. So efforts to be able to be done to increase prenatal care testing as well as access are incredibly important, not only for congenital syphilis, but for both that mother and baby's health.
Thank you, Dr. Zink.